Sahana vavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahavidyan karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti, shanti, shanti. Om. Good. Welcome back. Welcome also to the students attending these classes online. We proceed to the final chapter of the Uddhava Gita. As I've said before, the prior chapter was mostly focused on jnana, spiritual wisdom, and it was a very profound chapter. The final chapter is a shift to bhakti, devotional practices, which is hardly surprising when you consider the context of the Uddhava Gita in the Bhagavata Purana. The Bhagavata Purana is the first and foremost devotional scripture for worship of Sri Krishna, in fact, Lord Narayana in all forms, but Sri Krishna in particular. So we shouldn't be surprised at all that Sri Krishna returns to bhakti at the end of this Uddhava Gita. I think we'll just begin, please. All right. Uddhava uvacha, Uddhava uvacha, sutuscharami mam manye. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me get the slide up. Thank you. Listen. Sudushcharami mam imam manye, sudushcharami mam manye, yogacharyamanatmanah, yogacharyamanatmanah, yathanjasapuman siddhyet, yathanjasanpuman tanme bruhyanjasachyuta, tanpu. So, Uddhava begins, having listened to this very profound teaching from his cousin, Krishna, they were cousins. If some of you found some portions of the prior chapter a little challenging to understand, you're in good company because Uddhava also found portions difficult to understand, which is why he begins with a question to Sri Krishna. He says, manye, I consider, yogacharyam, imam yogacharyam, this practice based on yoga. Remember, the yogi was introduced towards the end of the previous chapter, and a distinction was made between two kinds of yogis, one who was focused only on gaining various yogic experiences or gaining yogic powers, etc., but the other yogi was one with a proper teacher, a yogi who was given the proper direction to use these spiritual practices to go within for the sake of discovering that so-called inner divinity, or as Sri Krishna would say, his presence within you. And that was done not specifically through yogic practices, but it was done through self-inquiry, atma-vichara. And that atma-vichara requires guidance, and the guidance for the process, this is a very, very important statement. The main practice of in Advaita Vedanta, the main practice, as you all know, is Atma Vichara, self-inquiry. But that self-inquiry requires guidance. And the name for that guidance in general is simply called jnana. And the reason I'm making this distinction is that too often we think of jnana as information about. And many times people study scriptures and attend classes like this for the sake of acquiring information. Typical learning. But in this case, these scriptures and these classes aren't intended for that traditional kind of learning in which you acquire information, but rather all of these classes and all of these scriptures are meant as guidance for the practice of self-inquiry, atma-vichara. So we call it jnana. Jnana means knowledge, but don't be misled by that term. It is not the acquisition of more information, more knowledge, but in fact, we are all engaged on a practice of self-inquiry. In teaching that jnana to Uddhava in the prior chapter, some of it was fairly complicated, which is why Uddhava begins, Manye, I consider imam yogacharyam, these teachings of yoga, these teachings of jnana that you gave in a prior chapter. He says, I consider them sudushkaram, very difficult to understand. And Sanskrit is nice here. Dushkaram means difficult. If dushkaram means difficult, sudushkaram means really difficult. Got it. So he says, really difficult for whom? Anatmanaha. Get the right meaning here. Atma doesn't always mean Satchitananda Atma. Here it simply means oneself. So one who is anatma is one who lacks self-control. One whose self is not owned, is not controlled. Somebody who's immature. Somebody who has lacked the preparatory practices needed before this kind of study. So he goes on now to ask Sri Krishna, yata puman siddhyet, yata, the manner in which puman, a person, siddhyet, can accomplish this yoga of self-inquiry. Yoga means any spiritual practice. Don't get a narrow meaning for it. Any spiritual practice can be called yoga. So we speak of jnana yoga, bhakti yoga, dhyana yoga, etc. all the time. So here, yata puman siddhyet, the manner in which a person can perform this yoga of self-inquiry anjasa properly. So the whole idea of the guidance is there's a process to go through in that practice of self-inquiry, which requires guidance. So how can that be performed properly? Tanme bruhi anjasa achyuta. Achyuta, O Krishna, tanme bruhi, please. Tan, that, may, unto me, bruhi, please tell me that anjasa correctly, or in brief, please tell me how to perform that practice of self-inquiry. Again, look at the context. He's just explained it. Sri Krishna has just spent a whole chapter telling Uddhava how to do it. And then Uddhava says, yes, but I have one question. How to do it? And that's like Arjuna in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. The first half of the chapter goes by, Sri Krishna is giving all these detailed instructions, how to control your mind, how to fix your mind on the object of meditation. And after all of that, Sri Krishna says, if you spoke American English, it would be, yeah, but. And Arjuna said, it's still difficult to control my mind. After Sri Krishna had taught how to control your mind, Arjuna said, yes, but it's still difficult to control my mind. So these questions really indicate how difficult this practice is, and you know, I don't know how to say it. It's difficult in a particular way. It's not difficult like studying calculus or nuclear physics. Doesn't not that kind of technical difficulty. But there's a certain subtlety to this, to these teachings and to this practice. Subtlety in the sense that it's easy not to get it. It's easy to misunderstand. It's easy to something subtle is something difficult to grasp. Like if you grasp a handful of sand, it just kind of comes out through your fingers. If you grasp a rock, no problem. But if you grasp a handful of dry sand, it just runs away from you. So that the tininess of the grains of sand indicates the subtlety of the subject matter. Okay. His question goes on for a while. Prayashah Pundarikaksha, Prayashah Pundarikaksha, Yunjato Yogino Manaha, Yunjato Yogino Manaha, Vishidantya Samadhanat, Vishidhanat Samadhanat, Mano Nigraha Karshitaha, Mano Nigraha Karshitaha. Pundarikaksha. He addresses Sri Krishna as one whose aksha, one whose eyes are like lotus leaves, the shape of a lotus leaf. O Krishna, he says in the second line, yoginaha, yogis, prayashaha, to bring that word in the first line, mostly. Most yogis who are yunjataha manaha, who are engaged in controlling their minds. Most yogis engaged in this practice of controlling the mind. What about them? What an interesting observation. This is an observation made by Uddhava, and he says, Vishidanti. They all get depressed. Now, you might, why would these yogis get depressed? Samadhanat. And that ta changes due to some grammar rules. It says, because they fail to gain samadhi. They fail to gain complete control of the mind. Again, we said before, this is not easy, and certainly none of you would expect accomplishing samadhi to be easy. It is meditation in general is a learned skill, and you require a tremendous amount of such skill to be able to achieve samadhi. Do you think every we have this image, so many yogis living in caves up in the Himalayas. Suppose we took a survey. What a modern concept, right? We're going to go like the census in this country. Every 10 years, they come knocking at your door or something. So we do a survey of all these yogis living in caves up in the Himalayas. And presuming we could get an accurate record from them, what percentage of them do you think are enlightened? None of us really know. It would be reasonable to assume a minority of them are enlightened. The fact is, if they were enlightened, why would they sit in that crummy cave for so long? Presumably, living in that cave is sadhana. If their spiritual practice was successful, there's no necessity to continue being stuck in that cave. And just an observation. So this underlines the point that meditating in a cave and gaining samadhi is not a given. It requires such a high level of skill, all meditators may not climb to that high level. It may remain inaccessible. And for that reason, these poor yogis, Vishyadanti, they get depressed. They get a more literal meaning of this Vishyadanti. Comes from sud, to go down in this case. To go down, to go down in an emotional sense is to become depressed. To go down in a physical sense is to get tired. So these poor yogis meditating so much in the caves, they get tired. They get worn out by this intense practice, and yet they stay in their caves. Why? Wouldn't a reasonable person, if you have done, your guru gives you a practice, by the way, remember in our last chapter, we observed that not all gurus give proper instruction to their disciples. And that's a fact, and that's a huge problem. So it just happens, and sadly, it happens a lot. So suppose this yogi was given wrong instructions, and he goes into the cave to meditate, and after 10 years, you'd say, kuch nahi ho gaya. After 10 years, nothing has happened. And yet, he stays in the cave. Why doesn't he recognize that it's not working and come out of the cave? Well, this is a good example of misplaced shraddha. So he was given this instruction by his guru. He presumes incorrectly that he was given proper instructions by this guru. So he has this commitment, and that's what Sri Krishna says in the last line. These yogis are mano nigraha karshitaha. They are karshita, they're drawn. They are driven to do what? Mano nigraha, control the mind. So they are this kind of inner drive or commitment, the inability to reassess. This is kind of an important point that gets overlooked in spiritual life and other aspects of life. People, especially in the traditional Hindus, would say, once you've committed yourself to doing it, you have to be firm. You have to do it no matter what. And then they'll give as an example, look at Bhishma, Pitamaha. He made these vows to his father, and he held on to those vows firmly at all costs. Well, at all costs meant a terrible war in which his entire family got wiped out. Bhishma should have reconsidered those vows. That's what the story shows. We have to interpret these stories correctly. The story shows that Bhishma's clinging to those vows ended up being harmful. Bhishma could have avoided that war in one sentence, by uttering one sentence, correct? Those of you who know the story well, he could have said one sentence, and he could have prevented that entire war. He didn't. Why? Because of holding on so firmly to those vows. So this illustrates then, there's tremendous value in reassessment. Means after a period of time, check in. How am I doing? How is this going? Any problems? Any changes needed? And some people think that approach shows a lack of commitment, and I think that's not correct. Maybe somebody can just inform them. My guru had a nice way of putting it. He says, make a decision today. Good. Be firm, be decisive, make a decision today, and be ready to change it tomorrow if the situation changes and requires that. So very, very pragmatic. So these gurus, I'm sorry, these yogis are unable to reassess the situation, and therefore they trap themselves in. And here's an interesting observation. You know, again, why did they stay in those caves? Well, if a yogi has stayed in a cave for 10 years, and as I joked with you, kuch nahi ho gaya, nothing happened, even if he does reassess, what are his options? Now, this is strictly an Indian context. So this fellow has been living in a cave for 10 years, no family, no contacts, no nothing. He's going to come out of the cave and do what? It's just a pragmatic problem. He has no skills to get a job. He has no family to take care of him. He has no infrastructure to fall back on, no safety net. So for this yogi, even after reassessment, he may judge that maybe it's better just to stay here. I'm sure that happens. I have no question in my mind that, not always, but for some it does happen. They don't see any other choice. They have become comfortable with that lifestyle, and they just keep going. All right, let's continue. We go to a longer meter now. Sometimes a longer meter I've explained as being able, as allowing the author to express more complex ideas. So when the subject matter becomes more complex, you'll often see a shift to longer meter. Here, it's not that the subject matter gets more complex. And please remember, do you think Uddhava and Sri Krishna are speaking in verses? Do people do that? You may converse in Sanskrit, fine. No one speaks in verses. So these verses are composed by Vyasa or some descendant of Vyasa based on this dialogue between Uddhava and Sri Krishna. Just as the Bhagavad Gita are verses composed by Vyasa based on that dialogue between Sri Krishna and Arjuna. So why the longer meter here? Uddhava is not bringing in anything so complicated. It gets very poetic. So you can imagine if you're asking questions, especially if you're asking questions of someone that you love and respect so much, you might have some flowery language in your question as you're kind of pleading. You don't want the person to be upset with your question, and you want the person to be very elaborate in their answer. So then there's a certain kind of flowery way of asking a question, which is expressed here in a very poetic way. Atha-tha-ananda-dugdham-parambhujam Hamsa-shrayeran-aravindalochana Hamsa-shareyan-aravindalochana Sukham-nu-vishveshwara-yoga-karma-bhis Sukham nu vishveshwara yoga karma bhis twan maya yami vihitana maninaha twan maya yami vihitana maninaha. It says atta, atta, ataha. First atta now. Ataha, therefore. So this is, again, this is poetic, this expression, ataha, is actually found in certain scriptures. So it's a poetic way of beginning this question, this part of the question. But ataha, therefore, now in the second line, hamsaha. Are we talking about swans? I don't think there are any. We did talk about swans. Remember the Hansa Gita? Ah, where Hansa referred to an enlightened person, an enlightened sage. And we said the word Hamsa or Paramahamsa means such an enlightened sage. We gave several symbolic reasons for that, like the Hamsa is one who in mythology can separate milk from water. Or another example is a Hamsa. A Hamsa is the observation. The Hamsa can sit in that water all day long without getting wet. Right? The feathers apparently prevent them from getting wet. Somebody else said, I'm not sure this is so impressive, but somebody said that these birds are some of the few animals which are equally adept of being in the water, flying through the sky, and walking on the land. I don't know if that's a reason or not, but some people say that. Anyway, for a variety of reasons, Hamsa ends up being symbolic of the enlightened person. There's also an interpretation of Hamsa meaning Brahman, but let's not get into all of that. We discussed that all in great detail in that Hamsa Gita. You can go back and see those verses again. So these Hamsa, these enlightened ones, maybe not wise ones, so just take it like that, or sages, as I've translated here. These sages, what do? Shariran. They seek refuge. Aravinda Lochana, again talking about Sri Krishna, addressing Lord Krishna as one whose Lochana are Aravinda, like the petals of a lotus. So these great Hansa, these sages seek refuge at Sri Krishna's feet. Oh, we said poetry. They shariran, they seek refuge where? End of the first line, pada ambujam, at the lotus feet. What a common expression. I don't see. I'm making a point, right? You can't see it on the video. There it comes. All right, I have to make it come on the video. I don't see a lotus here at all. The point is that this is a strong poetic expression. We take it for granted. You've heard that expression, lotus feet, a gazillion times. But consider that of all parts of the human body, the feet are the lowest, the dirtiest, especially if you're walking in sandals or, you know, chappals on dirty ground. And, you know, they're not particularly attractive. Face can be attractive, other parts can be attractive. The feet are not particularly attractive parts of our anatomy, at least. Maybe podiatrists might feel differently. But here, the point is to take the humblest limb of the body and turn it into an item of praise. This is poetry, the power of poetry. The power of poetry here. Parambujam, they seek refuge at the lotus feet. And more poetry. Not just any lotus feet. Ananda Dugdham. The lotus feet that give you ananda. But ananda dugdham, they give you lotus when they literally milked. When you milk the feet, they give you ananda. When you know, I don't think any of us have done that, milking a cow. I suppose it's something like this. But here, I suppose the metaphor then is you have to milk the feet. You massage. when you massage the feet, you get ananda. Notice, who gets the ananda? The owner of the feet or you? Aha. This is the idea, and this is how the poetry works. Nice to look at that poetry a little bit. So, those who, by the way, this milking the feet, don't think it's laborious because in the beginning of the third line, which ends the sentence, sukham, easily, happily. So these sages readily and happily seek refuge at the Sri Krishna's feet and are blessed by doing so. On the other hand, but Vishweshwara, O Lord of the world, he addresses Sri Krishna. He says, those who are yoga karma bihi, those who are by their practice of yoga, those who refuse, so sitting in the cave for 10 years, nothing has happened, and continue. Those who are meditating, and after 10 years, unable to quiet the mind, they continue. So those people, yoga karma bihi, by their practice of yoga, tvat mayaya, due to your maya, and here maya means, interesting to think of Ishvara's maya like this. We are all born ignorant. Is it not true? Where did that ignorance come from? Tvat mayaya, due to your maya. So Ishvara is the author of everything, including your ignorance, the ignorance we are naturally born with. He says, ami vihitaha. These yogis are vihitaha, are overcome. They are deluded, tvat mayaya, by your maya. That's why they continue. And they are maninaha. They're prideful in the sense that I am committed to this practice no matter what. I'm not going to let go. And this is against what I said before. Commitment is good to a point. Reassessment is also part of wisdom. Commitment is important. Reassessment is also important. But these yogis, being maninaha, being kind of stubborn and prideful, they don't reconsider, and as a result, na. Huh? What does that na do? You have to go back up to the first half of the verse. They don't seek refuge at the feet of Sri Krishna because they are committed to their practice, whatever it is. They don't consider any other options. This shows an important point. We all recognize the value of commitment, the value of effort. You and I know very well that nothing great is accomplished in life without commitment and effort. The problem is sometimes our commitment and effort are misdirected, right? As it was for Bhishma. His commitment to holding on to the vow, he thought he was following, he was committed to Dharma. Absolutely committed to Dharma. But sometimes Dharma requires unusual responses in unusual situations. And in this situation, Dharma was not to be stubborn and hold on to this to these vows. Dharma was to reconsider. But Bhishma had that commitment which was misdirected. It was a genuine commitment, but it wasn't properly directed. So that happens in every avenue of life. But just to give a common example, have you ever received bad advice from someone and then effort follows? Like, it is a bad example, but you get some investment advice. Someone has inside information. And with this inside information, you get very engaged in shifting your investments around and all of that. And you end up losing a lot of money because your effort was misdirected. It happens. In the other case, we talked about the yogis whose sadhana is misdirected. Much more consequential than losing some money in the stock market would be having a guru who gives you incorrect guidance. I think the consequence of the latter is much, much more severe, much worse. So commitment and effort is crucial, but it must be properly directed. And to ensure that it's properly directed, this reassessment I spoke about before is crucial. So let us keep that in mind. Okay, where are we? We are done with this verse. I think we'll see just one more. Okay. Oh, now the meter is even longer. So we went to 12 syllables before. Now we go to 14. And to help you pronounce it, I'll break each line into parts. If I can even make it here. Kim chitramachyuta tathaitad. Kim chitramachyuta tavaitad. Ashesha bandho. Ashesha bandho. Dasyeshwananya sharaneshu. Dasyeshwananya sharaneshu. Yadatma sattvam. Yadatma sattvam. Yo rocha yat sahamrgaihi. Yo rocha yat sahamrgaihi. Swayam ishvaranam. Swayam ishvaranam. Srimat Kiriti patapidita, Srimat kirita patapidita, padapitaha, padapitaha. Very poetic. That last line is one word. one long compound. We'll see that in a moment. So here, let's just get the general idea of this verse before we plunge in. So here, Uddhava is continuing to use this flowery language for the sake of getting a helpful response from Sri Krishna, and he does so by praising Sri Krishna. And it's like, if you're going to ask someone a question, and you begin by telling the person, you already know everything about this topic, so tell me. So you praise the person as being knowledgeable. So now you've taken away the excuse. If he doesn't know, he can't say, I don't know. You just praised him as knowing. So here the idea is not knowing, but rather Sri Krishna is all compassionate, so he will have compassion on Uddhava and give that answer. That's kind of the context here. So Uddhava says, Achyuta, O Krishna, kim chitram? It's not surprising at all. What is not surprising at all? Achyuta, here's some more praise. There's another term of address at the end of the line. Achyuta, the one who is absolutely firm, and Ashesha Bandho. Ashesha Bandhu, changed with some grammar rules, the one who's a friend without exception. No one is an exception. So Sri Krishna, who is a friend to everyone, including his cousin, Uddhava. So, O Krishna, O friend of all, kim chitram? Is it surprising at all that, second line, Das Yeshu amongst your devotees. Not exactly servant. So amongst your devotees, those who are devoted to you, those who worship you. What about them? Those who are ananya sharaneshu. The one who seek you and you alone as a refuge. Ananya sharana. The one whose sharana, whose refuge is ananya. Nowhere else. The ones whose only refuge is Sri Krishna, his so-called lotus feet. What about them? He says they get tava. We skipped that tava in the first line. Tava yat atmasattvam. Yat atmasattvam. He says they gain atmasat. Is an interesting word. Yeah, I'm not sure what the grammar. I'm looking for Vasanti, our grammar expert. I think she's out of the room. Anyway, there is some grammatical termination here. Atmasat means to be non-separate, to be at one with. Atmasat, to be at one with. Atma means that person's essence. So those who tava atmasat tvam, who gain non-separation from you. Those who gain non-separation from you. I've translated here in an easier way to understand. Those who gain intimacy with you. Those who worship you. This is a little important. Those who worship you not on an altar, those who worship you not in Vrindavan or some celestial Vrindavan, those who worship you with a sense of non-separation. Very Vedantic. Those who seek your refuge and your refuge alone, what do they gain? They gain the ability to pray and worship the one who is within, the one who is absolutely non-separate. That's called atmasattvam, the state of non-separation. They gain that. So those devotees who look upon you alone as their refuge, they gain atmasattvam. They gain this intimacy, this non-separation with you. And you, O Krishna, you, yaha arochayat. Now the third line. Yaha arochayat. You, the one who is fond. And by the way, this is actually a reference to Sri Krishna in his, we can't really say Purva Janma. To say Sri Krishna has a Purva Janma sounds funny, but he had a prior incarnation as an avatara. His prior incarnation as an avatara was as Sri Rama, and this is now a reference, actually. Yaha arochayat, you, the one who in a prior incarnation as Sri Rama, and you'll see why it's necessary to interpret it like that. It says that you, arochayat, you were fond, saha murgaihi, even to the animals. Animals? Vanaras. the monkeys. So remember in the Ramayana story, the monkeys were presented as not quite human, they were, but not animals either. They had this intermediate status. They were neither human beings nor were they animals as we commonly understood. They were something in between, and that's important because even to these animals, even to these vanaras, even to these monkeys, so to speak, you were so kind to them. and gentle and encouraging with them. And at the same time, even though Ishvaranam, for the great gods, I have to give you the context here, otherwise that last line will boggle your mind. The sense of this second half, what Uddhava means to say, is all the great gods in heaven fall down at your feet, and you don't give them special attention. You give attention to all these monkeys. This is the idea. So Brahmaji, the commentator, says, Brahmaji himself falls at your feet, and yet you still give attention and love to all these monkeys. This is the sense of the praise. And he does so, this compound, Srimat Kirita Tata Pirita Parapita. One word. And by these long compounds, you usually get the meaning right to left. So he's talking about Sri Krishna, whose Parapitaha, whose feet are like an altar, whose altar-like feet are, again, poetry, pidita, not injured. Pidka is also to press, not just to injure. Mostly we think of pida as some kind of hurt or harm, but pida is also to press. So his blessed feet, we'll just go with that. His blessed feet are pressed. Pressed with what? Tata, the edge. The edge of what? Kirita, crown. The edge of the crown, meaning the top of the crown. So the top of the crown, which is Srimat, which is shining, which is golden. The golden top of the crown worn by Brahmaji and Indra and all of these are pressed down at your feet. And still, you give your attention and love to all these monkeys. That's the sense of the poetry. And in all of our scriptures, don't think that high poetry is unique to Kalidasa and these great poets. Of course, their poetry is of the highest level. But in all of our scriptures, you will find this kind of poetry. Not necessarily everywhere. In Kalidasa's work, it's poetry from beginning to end. In the Bhagavata, in the Mahabharata, in Ramayana, certain passages are highly poetic. And this passage is obviously highly poetic. So Uddhava is really doing his best to get Krishna in a good mood. So he will get a very elaborate answer to his question. I think there are two more verses with Uddhava's question, and then we'll see the answer. We'll see that next week. Announcements quickly. We have the tomorrow, Sunday, we have our Vedanta class, Shankara's Upadesha Sahasri, at 10 o'clock, followed by question-answer, satsang, at 11. Also, let me remind you, next week, Saturday, our program will change. So instead of meditation, my meditation at 10 and Uddhava Gita at 11, instead I've requested Vasanti to give this workshop on mindful awareness meditation. And she did this many years ago, so I want her to give this workshop once again. So in place of these, our usual Saturday classes, the workshop requires the two sessions. So she will. It will include this delightful explanation of mindful awareness meditation, and she'll include a guided session as a guided meditation practice as well. So plan on coming next week, and we'll conclude with our prayers. It's okay. No, it's okay. Om Gananahan Twa Ganapatigam Avamahe Kavingavinam Upamashravastamam Jeshtarajam Brahmanam Brahmanaspatahana Shrinvan Utibhisirasadhanam Om Mahaganapataye Namaha Ishvaro Guru Ratmeti Murti Bheda Vibhagine Vyoma Vadvyapta Dehaya Dakshina Murtaye Namaha Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsachanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Gurum Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhavet Asato ma sadgamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityor ma amritangamaya Om shanti 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 Om Tat Sat.